would anyone ride on top of an elevator?
The venerated bluesman, venerated for his unique piano and singing style with What Will Become of Me. Here he is backed up by Fleetwood Mac and his band. This is from his 1969 album, The Biggest Thing Since Colossus. Talk about a person with no problems with self-confidence. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and sad news today. After serving for 52 years in Congress, the most senior member of Congress, John Conyers decides to quit. He retired today and named his son, John Conyers III, to fill out the rest of his term. I'm going to be talking about this in great detail tomorrow, and you will know why. I urge you to listen. I urge you to encourage other people to listen, because this is a monumental development. It's incredible in its import. It's incredible in its impact. And we really need to get deep into this development. Well, we learned yesterday what will become of former Congresswoman Corrine Brown of Jacksonville, Florida. A federal judge sentenced her to 5 years in prison for creating a bogus charity and using more than $800,000 that she raised through it as a slush fund. Brown was convicted in May on 18 counts that included participating in a conspiracy involving a fraudulent education charity, concealing material facts, required on financial disclosure forms, and filing false tax returns. At age 71, she had been in Congress for 24 years, but lost her re-election bid last year after she was indicted. Today on Lead Stories, another chapter in the saga of what's becoming of the Clintons. and the beleaguered foundation they've named after themselves. Charles Ortel, a retired Wall Street banker turned financial investigator, initiated his own investigation into the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, and over the course of 2 years, perhaps even more, has unearthed what he calls the largest unprosecuted fraud in U.S. history. His findings, as you know, have initiated and or bolstered probes into the foundation, both in the United States and by several foreign governments as well. We at Lead Stories have benefited firsthand and exclusively from his ongoing reports, and he's here with us again today to tell us some more of what he has found. And in light of what's going on, or what went on yesterday, it becomes all the more relevant and poignant to discuss how the government deals with charity fraud in the case of Corian Brown, and how it's not dealing with Clinton's and the Clinton Foundation, as in the case of Hillary and Bill Clinton, principally. Charles, welcome once again to Lead Stories. Glad to have you.
It is my great privilege and honor, Yatrice. Thanks for letting me come back on.
Well, how could one pass up this grade of investigation that you have been doing all this time, now forming the basis, I might share with the audience, you can see where governmental entities are taking their cues from the facts that you have uncovered about the Clinton Foundation during your own self-initiated probe. And this is not the first time you've done this kind of thing. Back in 2007 and 8 and 9, when Wall Street was crumbling, it had a lot to do with the fact that you did work that proved that several of the companies publicly traded were in fact overinflating their stock, GE among them, AIG among them, others among them. But it was as a result of your investigation that the whole thing came apart.
Well, thanks for bringing that up. And I think, you know, it's taken a while here, but we are talking about, in the case of the Clinton Foundation, we're talking about the largest unprosecuted set of frauds ever attempted. And in the case of the financial crisis of 2007 through 9, which I would argue is still going on, you're talking in financial terms about hundreds of trillions of dollars of activity and a system that is being propped up by the intervention of our own Federal Reserve System, central banks around the world, and the big governments around the world. So, you know, it's a big, big set of problems. But starting with the Corian Brown matter, there's a lot of paper, actually, in this trial, in this criminal prosecution, that is worth reading if people have time. The U.S. attorney put out a 50-page sentencing memo that is really gripping reading. And then the sentencing order is further 25 pages, again, gripping reading. And the Clintons should, at this stage, all of them, be quaking in their boots, because The 5-year federal prison term for a 71-year-old lady who was, during 2016, running for re-election, for a lower office than Hillary Clinton and her family were seeking, gives her 5 years in prison for an $800,000 criminal conspiracy where she knowingly lied to investigators, knowingly filled out federal tax returns, knowingly engaged in a corrupt conspiracy, abusing her power. All you have to do is just mark that sentencing order up and divide, you know, you take the declared donations of the Clinton Foundation, $2.3 billion, divide that by 500,000 or 800,000, multiply the result by 5 years, and human beings will likely be out of existence by the time Hillary, if she could, and Bill and Chelsea, if they could, serve out their terms. I mean, they deserve prison terms here that are outrageously long. And indeed, the scale and scope of the crimes, which I believe the Clintons and their trustees and donors have committed here, with the connivance of the Obama administration and with the connivance before that of the George W. Bush administration, you know, is a big tale that must be told. And I think try as the FBI might to obstruct this investigation, I think events in recent days and weeks, really in the last several days, tell me that the battle between the brave men and women who serve on the line at the FBI and put their lives in every day for each one of us, irrespective of our gender, our color, our ethnic background, our socioeconomic status, those brave men and women have probably seen enough and had enough of the political elements within the FBI and the politically charged partisans in the Department of Justice who have been trying to put a cork into this saga. And you asked on several broadcasts ago, did Barack Obama know about this or not? And the more I think about it, it was a great question, the more I think about the history and the known facts, which we have access to in the public domain, the more I come to the conclusion that by June of 2008, it is likely that the Clinton partisans and Team Obama reached some sort of accommodation back then, wherein the Democratic Party, both at presidential level and maybe at local level, would tap into the money flows that the Clintons had access to through their crooked, fraudulent foundation and use those money flows to support the Obama first election campaign and then subsequently the 2010, 12, 14, and 16 elections. I think the real collusion that's been going on here, and it is a crime in this case, it's a criminal conspiracy, has been to use this crooked set of foundations, not just the main Clinton Foundation, but all the allied foundations, as ways both to pay for the retinue of staffers out of, you know, in theory, legitimate jobs at these foundations, but also then to tap into these flows that were sent towards the foundations to divert them and use them to fund the exorbitant costs of flying candidates around, both the presidential and other candidates around to venues, pay for their consultants, pay for ad time, and, you know, on the side, as Corinne Brown did, likely send some to their personal accounts. That's the real scandal, and that it has gone on for this long under Republican and Democratic presidential administrations suggests to me that it has, in fact, been covered up, and that it was investigated between 2001 and 2005 by a team that included Mueller and Comey. And they couldn't find what is obvious. It's out there in the public domain. They couldn't find that then. And I think they've been trying to cover up their failures ever since. And this fraud is just, you know, like the La Brea tar pits. You know, you put your toe into a tar pit, and the next thing you know, your entire house is covered in tar, and the whole neighborhood's covered in tar. Now, then the city and the state and the country and now the global community is covered in the tar of this decision, this really bad decision, to use a charity, in the case of the Clinton Foundation, Presidential Foundation, as a vehicle, starting October 23, 1997, when it was created, as a vehicle to defray the legal expenses that the Clinton family had run up trying to cover up preceding scandals, then, I would argue, to use this charity as a way to source money on a tax-advantaged basis for Hillary's first Senate campaign, for her reelection campaign in 2006, for her presidential campaign starting in 2007 and 8, and then, you know, the rest is history. And so if you're going to go after, I mean, this is a really rich story. We've been talking about it on your show for some time. You're down there in Florida. And it really taps into many important veins. Why is it that last summer when Corinne Brown was running for, there was a redistricting of her district for, in effect, for reelection, but in a new district, why did the Department of Justice make a decision to target, to proceed with a case against Corinne Brown over what turned out to be an $800,000 charity fraud, when at the same time James Comey, you know, almost the same time, made a decision not to proceed with the email case and to slow walk, I would argue, the whatever they're called, whether they're matters or investigations, the FBI field office people in four separate offices, according to Cheryl Atkinson, were pursuing. Why did they go slow against Hillary, who was seeking a much higher office, who would have had, you know, Corinne Brown could do what she did in Congress, but she didn't have the ability to appoint the attorney general and then to, you know, direct the Justice Department, had Hillary won, to probably put you, Yatrice, and me together in the same prison. I mean, you know, she didn't have that power, but Hillary would have. So why go slow against Hillary and her team and go real hard against this person of the same age as Hillary? And now they're making an example of her over an abuse of trust. She's one of 435 congresspeople. This is somebody who would have been the leader of the free world and the president of the United States, somebody who also, it wasn't good enough for Hillary to just game the foundation. In addition, she rigged the Democratic Party, I would argue. And, you know, so it seems to me there people across the country should be asking some very tough questions here. You know, why is there one set of rules for an African-American woman who apparently ran or has now been convicted, 18 counts, running an 800,000 crooked scheme in one state, when we have a 71-year-old or 70-year-old white woman who is politically shameless, I would argue, who has been enjoying the benefits of a more than $2.3 billion charity fraud, just counting the main Clinton Foundation, and just counting its declared sums. Why is there one set of rules for Corinne Brown and another for the Clintons? That is not right. There should not be the two sets of rules. And especially,
and it's a double whammy, too, because Hillary Clinton is married to Bill Clinton.
Exactly.
He's got problems. He's got problems of a whole different sort. But together they share this responsibility for coming clean with the foundation.
Right. And speaking of Bill's problems, and I think they're Hillary's too, for enabling him, you know, why is it fair for John Conyers to have to step down? He hasn't been convicted of anything. He didn't settle a sexual harassment claim for $850,000 the way Bill did against Paula Jones. Conyers just steps down. Bill uses the machinery of the presidency, and this is Kathleen Willey and Juanita Broderick and Paula Jones and Kathy Shelton's time to finally get the attention and fair consideration they deserve. Bill is charged with various offenses, and, you know, beginning by January of 1998, what does he do? Well, first of all, he uses the machinery of government to slow down with every spurious defense he could come up with, executive privilege, that's not a good enough, executive protection privilege, something that doesn't even exist. All these false claims, run up at taxpayer expense, delaying the administration of justice against Paula Jones. And then he stays in office fighting impeachment and even campaigns in 1998 once he's, you know, they campaign and raise money off of this tawdry record. And he doesn't resign. He's lionized. He leads out his turn. And then he goes off and he makes $153 million in the speaking circuit with his wife. I mean, you know, why is that fair? I mean, a lot of big questions have been raised in the last 24, 48, 72 hours here. And they deserve answers.
Well, one of the things that is related, or it seems related, and is in its nascent phase, is the Barack Obama Foundation.
Yeah.
What have you found that makes you concerned that he is following a parallel track, taking basically the model of the Clintons, and is proceeding to build his foundation on those principles?
Well,
if you could call them principles.
Okay. Yeah, principles, right. The Capone, they're going to change the name of both of them to the Al Capone Foundation. But, you know, I think what we have here, and in a sense it's progress, we have a situation where the framers never anticipated, the Constitution never anticipated that a spouse of a president might someday become president. So that never having been contemplated, there is, and I guess the decision to shorten presidential terms to from unlimited down to two happened, I think that was after 1946, so women could vote then. But the point is that I think what we have in the Clinton Foundation, Jeff Gerth alleges in his book, it was a long-standing plan to have Bill go first, then Hillary, and then, God forbid, followed up with Chelsea. That has been a long-standing plan. And presidential foundations never, you can look at the legislative history as I've done, it's, you know, written for you. Presidential libraries are meant to house the records created by a president during his presidency, his or her presidency, in one place where scholars can have access to them and study the, what actually happened, to coin a phrase. And, you know, that's what they're supposed to be. They're the property of we the people. They're not Bill Clinton's property or Hillary's or Barack Obama's property. And, you know, I think what has happened here is that the Clintons, you know, they've corrupted everything they touched. They corrupted the concept of a presidential library. Now, maybe some of the previous presidents have done some of the same stuff, but, you know, presidential libraries, instead of being, you know, something that are less expensive to the taxpayer because the building is put up by contributors, not the government, and it's endowed by the contributors, instead of being less expensive and a way where we can study what happened, they've become partisan preserves in the case of the Clinton Foundation, where, you know, you want to find out the dirt on the Clinton presidency, you're not going to find it at the library because you're not going to get access to it, right? That is not what it's supposed to be. That is what it is in the case of the Clinton Foundation. And the Obama Foundation is shaping up, in my mind, to be even worse. It's only been in existence now for, what, 3 years? But and it has precious little money raised, at least according to the forms for 2015, which I have seen. I haven't seen the ones for 16 yet. But they haven't raised that much money. They tried. The original forms were done, of course, when Barack Obama was president and likely when he thought Hillary would end up succeeding him. So they figured, nobody's really going to check this too carefully. And by the strict terms of the statute, I'm not a lawyer, but by the strict terms of the statute and the precedent set, this thing never should have been approved to be a presidential library. Its forms aren't correct. They're not specific enough. The purposes aren't limited enough. The articles of incorporation are poorly drafted. And, you know, they imply that it's going to comply with the Presidential Libraries Act of 1955, amended in 86. But after saying that's what it was going to be to get the approval in 2014, which was swiftly granted, after Barack Obama stepped down, and as people started thinking about what he was going to do, they said, this is, you know, being a presidential library, that's too little for us. We're going to be a global convening thing. And you're not allowed to do what the Obama Foundation is doing, and you're not allowed to do what he's doing, going around the world soliciting money for it on the basis of, while false and materially misleading filings for it are circulating in the public domain. You really shouldn't be doing that. Yet, that's exactly what he just did. He went to New Delhi in India, collected a large personal speaking fee, I think, did the same thing in Paris over the weekend, another big speaking fee, it's rumored. And you're not supposed to be using a presidential charity to feather your nest. You're just not allowed to do that. And the thing that, you know, is amazing to me is that people may believe, maybe Barack Obama believes that, you know, Donald Trump will be impeached and replaced by Hillary for all we know, but you know, his behavior, the president's behavior, is very risky, I think. The donor's exposure is mammoth. And I think in part he's doing this possibly because he believes that Michelle, you know, when all the carnage is over in the Democratic Party and in Congress, you know, who's ever going to be left standing is either people who are, you know, not even allowed anymore to make contributions to IRAs because they're so old. You know, that wing of the Democratic Party, the 70, 80, and 90-year-olds, you know, can they really run in 2020? The freshest, most experienced face by the time we get around to 2020 could well be Michelle, who could demur and demur and demur and say, I'm not interested. You know, then there could be a draft Michelle movement, and at the last minute she could swoop in. I mean, that may be what they're thinking, and that may be why they're operating the Barack Obama Foundation the way they are operating it. I haven't just been silent on this or just talking on the radio. I directly approached a trustee and I said, listen, you are in serious trouble if you keep this up. And they refuse to listen to me. They say, well, we gave it to our lawyers. We want to talk to our lawyers. I'm not going to talk to their lawyers. I'll talk to the trustees of the Barack Obama Foundation and explain it to them. Let their lawyers talk to other lawyers. But, you know, it's not good what he's doing at the Barack Obama Foundation. And it's, you know, especially given what I sense is happening now on this Clinton Foundation investigation and on the Department of Justice investigation into the email, what do they call it, The Inspector General investigation into how the Department of Justice looked into the Clinton email. I think things are going on there. I hear a story today that that the immunity agreement between Comey and Mueller may have unraveled. Obviously, this latest revelation about the top FBI guy, you know, having an affair with somebody, they're both married, exchanging texts that are anti-Trump, and then Mueller not telling until just yesterday what was going on, letting this guy participate. I mean, the whole thing stinks. And, you know, it could unravel in a way that, you know, gives Donald Trump the keys to draining the swamp, which start by investigating what actually did happen with the Clinton Foundation going back to 1997, how it may have been used as an illegal fundraising scheme and conspiracy to advance the interests first of the Clintons and then of the Obamas, and then, you know, getting more into these other large foundations, and then into the donors, the Gates Foundation, the Ivy League universities, who themselves are tax-exempt, who are barred from giving money to these type of crooked foundations. You start opening this up, and you do have a way to drain the swamp, which is what I've been trying to urge people to do.
Well, you know, he is from the swamp. He's from the world of real estate, which is the original swamp in the United States. but he, too, just recently shut down his own foundation. Could you surmise why?
Sure. I mean, the foundation I think you're talking about is one, I think it was called the Donald J. Trump Foundation or something like that. And the first thing he had to do is either that or him personally, or I forget how it worked, somebody operated a university in the name the Trump University in New York State, which is a serious offense. You cannot do that in New York. But guess who's doing the same thing? The Clinton Foundation, on a much larger scale. So he actually, unlike the Clintons, he settled with New York State, they paid a $25 million settlement in connection with a far smaller alleged set of offenses than the Clinton Global Initiative is, far smaller. And probably his lawyer said, listen, you know, do you need that? I mean, we're not particularly happy that you're president of the United States because you got all these other things you could have done. And by the way, our fees are expensive, so we need you to make money to pay them. But we really just don't think it's the best of ideas for you to be president of the United States, to have these business interests, and also have the complication of a foundation in light of what you had to do with Trump University. So as a guess, they just said, listen, you don't need this aggravation. Just shut it down. Focus on your presidential duties. Let your kids take care of the business, and that's enough.
As is the case with the Clinton Foundation, based in Arkansas, is it allowed to build, as part of your complex, a private nest, if you will?
Absolutely not. I mean, so the precedent. I mean, the precedent.
Well, Bill Clinton has a private nest.
Oh, I know.
On the top floor of his foundation, and he stays mostly in Arkansas. He's not. They're not enjoying connubial bliss at the moment. So what's going on there? Was he anticipating that he would need to have his own space to literally do his own thing? And so part of the publicly supported library is living quarters.
Yeah, so the precedent has been that, you know, when the living president visits his or her presidential library, the precedent has been that temporary living quarters can be made available both for the president and for security reasons to his Secret Service staff for his protection. That has been the precedent. That's something the Bushes did. I don't know about Reagan, but that's something the Bushes did, I think, in each of their libraries. So that's the precedent. The rule, the way I read it, is a publicly supported charity, which the Clinton Foundation is not. It is controlled by the Clinton Foundation illegally. It has been controlled by the Clinton family illegally since the 2nd of November 2013 in gross violation of state, federal, and foreign laws. You can't do what they did and are doing. Nonetheless, they control it. And you're not allowed to operate such a charity to create, you have to put it differently, you have to operate such a charity exclusively for charitable purposes. And with the Clinton team, you know, you always have to define simple terms, right? Is not something that, you know, the word is can be debated by the Clintons. So exclusively, you know, probably they're sitting there saying, well, you know, there's 365 days in a year and I'm only here 17. So, you know, that's exclusively, pretty much, you know. No, exclusively means exclusively, 100%. And there have been court cases and revocation decisions that basically say that if you create a private benefit, which your a 5,000 square foot penthouse apartment with a, you know, almost many acre landscaped penthouse lawn and swimming pool exclusively used for your benefit, that's a personal benefit, a private benefit. The value of all private benefits created through the operation of a charity better not exceed $500. Now, maybe construction costs are light in Little Rock. A 5,000 square foot penthouse apartment only costs $375 in Little Rock. I don't know. But it strikes me that is a substantial private benefit. It is not available to any member of the public. It seems to devolve only. It's not a member available to every member of the Clinton family. It's just to Bill himself, one would seem. And, you know, that's just strictly forbidden. And
well,
yes,
he's a generous man, and his generosity extends to the public, several members of which have been exclusively invited to enjoy the penthouse apartment. Who
right.
Happen mostly to be females.
Exactly. Or I think Rush Limbaugh refers to that place as the presidential library and massage parlor.
Look, you know, you can't help but laugh, but this is very serious stuff. This is very serious stuff.
Exactly.
Let's go to the question now of what is happening on the international scene. Do you see them getting any closer to examining the legal aspect of this case of what they ought to do? Or are they hampered by, say, in the case of France, you know, they have some other troubles that they have to tend to, and this is low on the totem pole?
Well, yeah, I think the problem with this, and it's, I think we may have discussed this before, you know, if you want the bank to terrorize you, then you borrow a small amount of money from the bank. If you want to own a bank, then you borrow billions of dollars from the bank, and then when you get in trouble, the bank's in trouble. So similarly, in this case, the Clintons didn't go small. They went huge in this charity fraud. They involved, you know, literally dozens of heads of state, former heads of state, and every significant multilateral organization, the UN, the World Health Organization, and all the top universities in the world, all the big global media companies, all the gigantic philanthropic entities. So when this thing goes the way I think it's already going, a lot of people are going to have a lot of egg on a lot of faces. And so the first instinct is, oh, we don't need this mess at this time. You know, we can't destabilize, you know, the status quo. Too many people, let's hush it up. But it's past that point. And I think it's in a zone now where some of the people I'm aware of are looking at this and saying, you know, there's a lot of money to pay off claims here and to get our money back. But if we're the seventh government to sue the Clinton Foundation, you know, we're not going to be in as good a place as we might be if we're the first. And so I think a lot of pressure may be bearing down on our own authorities, our federal or the Justice Department, the IRS. The IRS has confirmed that they have been investigating this since last year, and around June of last year, July of last year. I mean, it doesn't take, I mean, they have the dumbest person at the IRS on this, you know, somebody who's, you know, just failed every single exam and sits in, you know, some sub-basement somewhere in some sweltering room with, you know, no resources, you know, or they're flummoxed because it's so big and it affects so many people, so many institutions. But the good news is that this is a way to cover off a large portion of our government deficit. A lot of charities have been behaving badly a lot of them. Bill Gates Foundation, in my opinion, is among the worst, and because they knew better. They've been doing, they've given this fraud over 100 different gifts, you know, different projects. They had to know that this was a fraud. Why were they doing this? And, you know, others are like that. So I think the foreign governments are waiting, I believe, to see what the IRS, what the Justice Department is going to do. And they also are waiting for Donald Trump and his people to get confirmed, because actually, I don't know what the status is at this moment, but several months ago, there were more people on Mueller's team, who obviously now we know are partisan hacks, anti-Trump hacks, there were more people on Mueller's team than Trump had been able to put into the Justice Department because the Senate's slow-walking all of his appointees. So we don't really yet know how many, whether Trump fully has control of the apparatus. It would seem to me that the crooked people, this Strzok guy and this his mistress and the other people like that, are more will come out, I believe, and be exposed. We'll get to see the true depths of corruption here. Then we can revisit how this whole thing started. I mean, I think there's some very serious questions that really need to be put into the frame now about, you know, when did the temperature get turned up on that created the set of events that led to the firing of Comey, that led to the hiring of Mueller? When did all, how did that all come together, and who was behind it, and who directed the unmasking of people, and how, was that used as a way to maybe upset the apple cart with the Trump incoming administration and immediately set it on a course for potential impeachment? What was really going on there? How involved were Obama administration officials and partisans in the seeming attempt here to rig the primaries against Bernie Sanders and just to install Hillary as the candidate? How involved were they in that? Were there any attempts, was there any collusion attempted between Jay Johnson's Department of Homeland Security, which I never understood why they felt they had to have, you know, impose greater security protection over polling places. I never got that at all. You know, how much of that may have been a heavy-handed attempt to sway the result in 2016? Who was involved in all that? Who was conspiring in all that? What might email traffic show? What might text message show? I mean, I think there's a large, gigantic cloud hanging over the 2015-16 period, where on one side of the aisle, the establishment was clearly shocked and displaced by Trump. No one expected in the beginning Trump to win, and he upended the establishment candidates. Whereas on the other side, the insurgency, which seemed to have a lot of strength behind it, of Bernie Sanders, was cut off at the knees through procedural means, maybe other corrupt means. You know, there needs to be a fair airing of what really happened, not what happened, what really happened. And, you know, if people, in the, shame on people of the Obama administration if they were involved attempting to rig that election, shame on them, and worse, if they created this false narrative that led to the Mueller investigation. I mean, this is not the way you're supposed to behave. And going back to where we started, if you're going to give a hard time and 5 years in prison to a 71-year-old woman who had served as a member of Congress for 24 years for $800,000, you certainly need to take a very hard look. What was Loretta Lynch doing on that tarmac? You know, why was Tom Fitton at Judicial Watch told there were no notes, nothing, and then all of a sudden there are 30 pages of notes? You know, what was really going on? What was Loretta Lynch promised? The right to stay on as Attorney General if Hillary won? You know, was she promised some economic benefits? What was really going on? I think we all want to know. And, you know, it shouldn't just be Corrine Brown, though she certainly deserves prison, it seems. So it shouldn't just be an African-American woman who goes to prison for this corruption. If the corruption is as bad as it seems, a lot of people need to go to prison. And a lot of money needs to be paid in restitution to pay down our debt.
Yeah, but you have uncovered all these very powerful pieces of evidence. Certainly, one would assume that because it's in the possession of the Trump administration, there would be great cause and great reason to make use of the evidence that you found, which they have. Are you beginning to feel that for political purposes and reasons, the Trump administration is beginning to waffle on whether to even broach this question at all?
No, not in the slightest. I think it's the reverse. I think what they're trying to do, and I don't know, not being coy or anything, I suspect that there are various camps. There are the people who are, and we all know them, people who are by the book do-gooders who regard, you know, what Corinne Brown did is odious, but see what the Clintons have done, maybe in league with the Bushes, maybe in league with the Obamas, is outrageous, an outrageous miscarriage of justice. That if you're going to open this can of worms up to the public to see it, you got to lay everything out in a very thorough manner. And that means there are a lot. This Clinton Global Initiative, I think we're going to see more of this in coming days and weeks. John Solomon at The Hill has hinted about this, as have others connected to the Uranium One informant, that the Clinton Global Initiative, and I talked about it on my show on Sunday, the Sunday with Charles show, I'll be doing a special edition tomorrow, Wednesday, going into more detail. That Clinton Global Initiative was actually the Clinton Grifters Initiative, in my opinion, where grifters in the government, about to leave the government, in banking, investors, got together in a closed session from 2005 in September through 2016 in September. Every September, they go into a room and they brag about what they were going to do for charity, when in reality, they were lining their own pockets around the world and creating fancy jobs for world leaders who were going to step down from government. They were creating new ventures to line the pockets of donors to the Clinton and Obama and Bush and other contributors, doing this not simply in the United States but around the world, global deals on global scale. You know, you start exposing all of that, and you're going to have to run newspapers on a daily basis that are, you know, 400 pages long. I mean, there's a lot of gripping detail in here. So as a guess, you know, they're taking their time. They're doing this patiently. I think the Corinne Brown step is a very big step, because I can't tell you the number of people who say, "Oh, Charles, you know, this is a traffic ticket. Nobody cares about this kind of stuff. Everybody knows charities have a problem." No, that's not right. Charity law is tougher than corporate law. People who operate charities as scams to go around the world bragging about their great works, as Hillary, Bill, and Chelsea regularly do, when instead they're using a charity to line their own pockets, to finance political campaigns, maybe even to pay for detectives to go after their enemies and stuff like that. You know, that kind of stuff is odious behavior, particularly from people who are, you know, supposedly the smartest men and women in the world. You know, every advantage, Ivy League education, Rhodes Scholars, you name it, governor, president, aspiring president, secretary of state, senator, attorney general. I mean, you can't do this kind of stuff for all the world to see and then get away with it. You just can't do that, because if that happens, then we will become a laughingstock, more of a laughingstock than we currently are. And for that reason, I think, you know, with each passing day, as people rip the blindfolds off, as they, you know, think about, you know, these celebrities in Hollywood and in New York are being unmasked, they think about these politicians who are being unmasked. Who knows, maybe we'll soon find out that academics and university presidents are doing the same thing. When those blindfolds get ripped off, the good men and women and children in this country who believe there is a difference between right and wrong, and believe there is a duty as you rise in the socioeconomic, you know, pecking order, you have more of a duty to do right and to resist temptation. When they see this mess, you can't let Corinne Brown rot in federal prison for 5 years at age 71, while Bill and Hillary and Chelsea are swanning around the world collecting speaking fees for uttering garbage over 20 minutes, and flying around in private planes, staying in presidential suites, making $200,000 a speech. That's not right. And something needs to be done. Actually, this Clinton Foundation needs to have its right to raise money cut off immediately. I don't understand why the various U.S. states, allow this fraud to continue to raise money. It's a simple matter for one. Is there not one attorney general in this country who will stand up, do the right thing, find a Spike Lee moment, and cut the fundraising rights off of this Clinton Foundation? It has not filed, once again, a validly, lawfully compliant and complete tax return. Yet it's out there. Bill is out there in a special appeal offering to match contributions to this fraud. Why is no attorney general doing the right thing here? I don't get it.
Hillary Clinton's supposed to be in poor health. Bill is in poor health. Could these things be factors in, you know, some kind of a compassionate treatment toward them and giving them a leniency that they don't deserve?
Well, I think it's the reverse. I mean, you know, if you read through the sentencing memo and order, whoever wrote that, you know, Corinne Brown treated this whole thing as first a joke. You know, I'm too busy to focus on this. I'm representing the people of Orlando. And she showed no remorse whatsoever. And they talk about this kind of behavior. Whatever Corinne Brown has done pales in comparison to the way Hillary and Bill are talking. They're flying around the world, bragging, raising more money, and they're not a care in the world, you know, saying this is a partisan witch hunt. They've shown no remorse. They've only become more brazen. And so, no, I don't believe they deserve compassion. Compassion is what they've had since 1976 or whenever it was that Hillary failed the bar exam the first time. I mean, they've had nothing but compassion and a break. You show them a break, and they steal more money. No, I think that for these people, compassion is over. They deserve to make a full – they should be getting a notice, do not destroy any records, do not take out any more debt, do not spend any more money, you know, prepare a listing of all your assets and your liabilities. They need to make full and complete restitution to we the people to help pay down this monstrous government debt, which has ballooned to a point not seen in recent history. That's what they need to do. And last week, I understand, you know, when this Lauer allegations came out, it seems like it was a month ago, but I think it was only less than a week ago, Hillary was asked about that, and she said, you know, each day that passes, I believe more and more in karma. And I'm thinking to myself, whoa, you, if you believe in karma, how do you go to sleep at night? I think the answer to that question is Chardonnay.
But, okay. What should we look for in terms of a hint of whether the prosecution of the Clintons and of their foundation is about to happen?
Well, there's some interesting signs that I see. One is at the state level. We have this political hack here, and it's not a surprise in New York State, Eric Schneiderman, who's our attorney general. And he, you know, under the law here, the way I read it, you're innocent till proven guilty. Again, I'm not a lawyer. You're innocent till proven guilty, which means that, generally speaking, authorities do not leak to the press, you know, what they're going to do to you in an investigation, because that would, you know, give to the attorney general an unfair advantage. Well, that's exactly what he did in the case of going after the Trump University right before the election in 2016. He publicized that he was going to do this thing, you know, and raise the temperature right before the election to try to sway minds. And he just recently did the same sort of thing against Project Veritas and James O'Keefe here in New York. So I note that the Clinton Foundation filings, unless they went in today, have not been made public on the New York State site, nor have they been made public on the California site. These are two states where the rules are much stricter even than the federal rules, the disclosure rules, and none of the Clinton filings in any of those two states are accurate. Yet these are two prime states for fundraising because there are a lot of high-income rich people who give money away in each of those states. So if we start seeing, you know, one or more of these states could implement actions at any minute, and some, if they do that, have to make them immediately public. So I try to watch that. And I think there comes a moment when Trump, and I think he was waiting as a guess to see how Mueller would behave himself. Today we have in the Wall Street Journal a call, and Wall Street Journal has not been particularly favorable to Trump, calls for Mueller to step down. You might see this thing, you know, proceed very quickly right through the, you know, through this holiday period, the holidays of a lot of government people. But, you know, a good moment to clean this up is right now. You know, it will not take much. If you read that sentencing order and sentencing memo on Corinne Brown, the IRS and the Department of Justice, actually the FBI, they have forensic accountants. They have people who can get into the weeds here. They have amazing resources. You know, they should be able to put this case together very quickly. And every week, I'm giving on my show, more and more evidence and links and slides for them to look at. We have a lot of people watching the show now, a lot of chatter on Twitter about it. You know, it's time for the good men and women, of the blind people in the FBI and Department of Justice, who, when they put their hand on whatever book it was, whether it was a Bible, a Torah, or even a Quran, when they swore to uphold the Constitution in their roles, they meant it. And they need to be allowed to do so, and we need to see this play out now. These people who have been on top corruptly of our government, the highest levels, need to be exposed, and they need to demonstrate to the world that we're serious. No one in this country, America, is above the law, not even a former president, not even an aspiring president. That
tale now, your show airs on Sunday, and you produce charts, which we can't do here, and other visual aids, like in the old days in school, a visual aid is up there. Tell us about your show.
Thank you, Corinne. Sorry, Tris, rather. Thank you. It's called Sunday with Charles. It's an association with Jason Goodman, who is an NYU Film School graduate, 46-year-old, award-winning 3D person. He's done a bunch of movies, and he has an apartment with a portion of it set up as a set. And he's got a channel called Crowdsource the Truth, where we engage with people, members of the public, or got like 34,000 subscribers. And we try to make our shows, you know, modern. In other words, it's not me just lecturing. It's an interactive process. We, as you rightly say, we put the slides that I talk about. They're accessible for free on the show summary. And it's last show was 2 hours and 15 minutes long. No commercials, no nothing. And that show very quickly, I think I checked this morning, that show went up 5 p.m. on Sunday, and as of this morning it has 15,000 views, which is pretty good. And we've got quite a few more like that. We're going to do a special edition tomorrow at 4 p.m. just to mix it up, do a Sunday with Charles on a Wednesday just to confuse people. And we'll do another show the following Sunday. And we're going to push on this until the people in federal, state, and foreign governments do the correct thing. And they have a Spike Lee moment. They do the right thing. This has gone on long enough. It is time for the Clintons and those who support the Clintons to give up, plead for mercy, explain what they did so the world can learn from it. We can all move on.
Speaking of foreign governments, as I asked, relating to the U.S. government, which of the foreign governments right now looking at the Clinton Foundation might be the first to tip on some kind of move against the Clinton Foundation?
Well, I honestly don't know. I'd just be guessing. But the Clinton Foundation, Barack Obama and the Clintons put out what they call the Memorandum of Understanding, making it seem as if it was really important and, you know, it was a complete fraud back on December 12, 2008. In that document, which is a matter of public record, there's a long list of governments that they claim supported the Clinton Foundation. These include the United Kingdom, France, Korea, South Korea, Australia, Norway, Sweden, I'm sure I'm leaving New Zealand out and others out, but there's a long list of foreign governments and big donors that supposedly supported the Clinton Foundation. And, you know, each of these organizations, the governments and the donors, have obligations under the law to make sure that monies they send to a charity actually go to a charity. And this is not a public charity. They killed this public charity on the 2nd of November 2013. You can't unkill something. So, I mean, this thing is a mess. People have been contributing. Some have been raising the scale of their contributions since this thing was killed on November 2nd, 2013. And the only course they have to limit their downside is to seek to get this money back. And so you see in Australia, for example, a country that gave close to $100 million or so to the Clinton Foundation, but whose former leaders have gotten money back from multilateral organizations, likely following the intercession of the Clintons. So there's a little model here where if you're the leader of Australia, you send $100 million towards the Clintons, but maybe once you step down, you get $500 million back from the U.N. And I'm just making those sorts of numbers up, but there's a long trail to follow here. And in Australia, they just had a local situation where the existing government, leading to a situation where the existing government may step down. In Norway, they've had a change of government. In Sweden, it's really very unstable. They're talking about possibly a civil war in Sweden brewing. So you could see each country is going to move on its own. But my personal bets, I left out is Canada. You know, Canada is, the Canadian people need to rise up and demand that Justin Trudeau explain why he has a foundation and why his finance minister has a foundation and why the Canadian government even now is increasing their support for the Clinton frauds. You know, the Canadian people need to rise up and consider this. But my personal favorites are trading off France and the UK. Both France and the UK have given mammoth sums to these frauds, this Clinton crime fraud.
Well, I'm getting a hint that we're out of time, so we've come to the end of the program. I thank you so much, Charles, for being with us today and adding yet another chapter to this sordid tale.
My great
and
pleasure.
And I want to say to the listeners that keep in mind, we have been with this story for 2 years. So it's not a fast flash in the pan, and you've been getting the materials from the source. I hope you appreciate it. See you tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you.
My mother did come back. Father left me way behind. Yeah, my mother didn't go. Mistreat me, mama.